Welcome everyone. This is our third session, and I like to always start with hearing from a couple of people if you have any successes or any questions or anything that is left over or that you tried out and learned something from since last time we were together. Would anyone like to share?
Hi, I just wanted to say that after listening to Michael from our last session, I got his book, The Search for a Nonviolent Future, and I'm not finished with it. I'm about halfway through, but it is fabulous, and I just really recommend it to anybody who wants to know more about his approach to nonviolence.
What spoke to you when you say it's fabulous? What spoke to you?
I had a lot of questions about, and he uses quotes, whether nonviolence works. And he talked about the kinds of really explosive situations that, frankly, like in the Hitler regime, where I was really conflicted about the war. And then he brought out all these things that were tried in a nonviolent way and how it did work in a different kind of working way. And he talked about the level of violence and how nonviolence can be used in all different levels of violence. And I guess it's just easy to go, when you're conflicted, to go to the worst case scenario, which is what I did. And he addressed that. And it gave me a lot of peace that, oh, you know, I can grow in this nonviolent way and develop that inner peace as these people in these greatly dramatic situations. They didn't just one day wake up and say, ah, I'm going to be nonviolent. You know, they had a walk in nonviolence.
Yeah.
So they were able to rise to the occasion. It's very uplifting and encouraging, and I just wanted to pass that on.
Thank you. I have much more clarity now what actually touched you without knowing it. You know, it's like, it was a great book. Doesn't tell me what it
why?
Is from it. So thank you for this. Anybody else? Did you try anything? Did you try to apply anything? Did you have any questions come up?
I live on Cape Cod, which is pretty close to Boston. Maybe that doesn't make any difference, but I was just in such deep sadness and grief. And I guess what I was calling it was at the ineptness of humanity sometimes that causes tragedy. And I just let myself stay with that. And I guess what I was doing was opening to the full emotional range.
Yes.
And after about an hour and a half, I was just sitting outside in the wind. And I suddenly felt this quiet gladness filling my heart that was so unexpected. And I didn't try to understand it, but I certainly welcomed it.
Yeah. I have, inside of me, I've had the experience that whenever I do something like this, I become a bigger person as a result. In a way that is not just like a one-time thing. It's like somehow I'm giving myself the information that there's more that I can handle than I knew before this incident, whatever the incident is. I'm wondering if that somehow speaks to you, or is it different?
I think it does, and I welcome hearing those words. They also just give me hope. But I do think it speaks to my experience, and I hadn't identified it in that way.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
The two that I practiced, and I wasn't sure whether or not to put it under responsibility or risking my significance, or one of the two, is that I'm helping to plan a family heart camp, and another one of the planners made they called it a request. I felt it as a demand, or I labeled it as a demand, and also labeled it as outrageous. And in the past, I think I would have kind of maybe stuffed it, and yet I really tried to step up and say, no, I'm going to take responsibility for how I'm feeling here and what's triggered in me, and not not even hide behind the tools of NVC. I'm feeling because I'm needing, and to take responsibility for those, and also so responsibility, but also risk significance, because I felt a lot of risk in it and risking how that was going to come out. And honestly, very much still in the middle of it, but feeling how much it's worth stepping out there to bring the other out as well, to bring them out into their fullness,
yes,
and the fullness of their request.
Oh, it makes complete sense. It's this way that I've noticed that when one of us goes all out for something that matters to us, all out rather than hesitatingly half out, then somehow in some inexplicable way it becomes a gift. It invites everybody to go with us in some place that nobody can go alone beyond a certain spot. It becomes something for everyone. And it's something that I've been thinking about for about 15 years, that there's a way that we are so afraid of putting ourselves out 100%. So we do it 50% and then we back off and then we try with our toes again and back off. And that is not a gift to anyone. That consumes energy. But if we decisively take a stand for the truth, my experience is that it becomes a gift. So, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So, there is one more person.
You know, I have been really risking my significance and taking actions and making clear requests. And that's been rewarding and fun and connecting. And I have a challenge as to how to do this, because there's this person that I was working with who was in India to bring NVC to India. And I went through introducing her to three different trainers, and we had the same issues that she would just take unilateral decisions, and the vision that I was holding wasn't unfolding. So I kind of decided to stop working with her and that kind of a thing. But it so happened now with a new person, I don't know how she got injected into the equation, because the organization is the same. And then she wrote back to me, so now tell me again, let's try it again. And so I said, fine. And then I'm again faced with the same issue about not keeping me in the loop and helping me to know what's going to happen next or what is happening when she's connected with the local people and the trainer. So I find myself very attached to how it should be. And yet I don't know how to manage both. Like, I have an attachment to the vision that I can literally taste and feel. So I don't know how to deal with this person using what I know and what I'm learning nonviolently.
So you want to bring into this the commitment to risk your significance, or is there any other commitment that you'd like to lean on?
I guess responsibility, no? I want to be responsible for my feelings and my actions, and mm-hmm. I find myself giving my power, saying that if he did it right, I would have my vision manifested. So I want to seek support to find the source of choice within me to live as I want to and ask for what I want.
Yeah. So when somebody does something that you don't like and you don't see a way to change what they're doing, then it becomes primarily an internal activity. An internal activity in which you really see what you do inside to create your distress. Am I making sense to you?
The interpretations and the messages I have.
Yes, yes. And that's, I mean, I'm just taking your word for it that there isn't really anything that you can do with this person. I don't know if that is true or not, but I'm taking your word for it. And then if that is the case, you know, I wrote a couple of weeks ago about mourning as a way to acceptance. I'm curious if you have tried that path.
Yes, I did. I mean, morally, in the sense of, like, you know, the two pieces that I've been really practicing is, like, knowing my vision and longing and yet accepting the reality. So accepting where she is, yes, how she is and everything. And that's why I re-engaged with her the fourth time. So the reality is that I'm engaged and I see that it's affecting me the same. And then the question I have is, how do I manage my longing, which I really can, you know, actually feel and taste? And
the longing
and
is not something that needs to be managed. You know, the fundamental path that I am talking about, you know what I'm going to say, is the wanting fully without attachment path.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there about managing your longing. It's more about allowing the longing to be in its fullness, even when you know it will not happen. So you don't shut down and withdraw and disengage from the longing.
Yes, yeah, I think I understand that part. And while I'm doing that, how do I do the practical kind of things, the deal with the reality, which triggers frustration? And
so there's two possibilities. One is that you can dialogue with this person to try to create change, and the other is that you work on mourning and acceptance. Either way, if you work on mourning and acceptance and you do choose to do dialogue, you will do the dialogue from a different spot, from a different place. That is what will allow you to be both passionately interested in and unattached at the same time. Is that you can really internally be at peace with the things that you want not happening.
Basically working on getting a little more unattached by mourning and accepting.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
So today's topic is about relating the commitments to NBC principles. And it's time to say again, I think I might have said it in the past already, I want to emphasize it today, that for me, NVC and nonviolence are not the same thing. What I mean to say is that there is a fundamental thing that is nonviolence as a path of life. And then NVC, or nonviolent communication, is a particular branch in that trunk. It isn't the whole thing. Meaning, NVC, for example, has very little specifically and directly to teach us about nonviolent direct action, which is a different path, a different aspect of nonviolence. The primary focus of NVC is how we work with things inside of us and how we try to sort things out with other people through a variety of forms of dialogue. The commitment, to my mind, are a bit larger than this or that form of language, this or that principle of NVC per se. And that's what I wanted to work on today, which is to see how the NVC principles per se relate to the commitments or don't. Where is the connection? Where is it different? And I have given you something to practice and learn, you know, in between last session and this session. So I am curious to see if people have anything that you want to express or ask about in terms of what aspects of NVC practice support the commitments and how it does that. For example, the piece that we just talked about, I would say that the practice of mourning, which is connecting deeply with the needs and allowing ourselves to be in that need, to be with the need, to feel the feelings that arise with it, supports at least the commitment to openness to the full emotional range and the commitment to accepting what is. So I'm curious if other people have other experiences of NVC principles or practices, more so practices, that you can see support, might support your ability to live the commitment. Is anyone seeing a way from your experience of NVC that practicing it can support you in being able to live the commitment, or vice versa?
The NVC practice of self-compassion is directly connected to the commitment of openness to myself.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm glad you're saying it in the way that you're saying it, because what I see is that the commitments in and of themselves are not a form of practice. They are a compass, a guideline for, possibly for practice, but they're not the practice itself. Thank you for this. I'm wondering if anybody else has any other NVC practice that you can see supports the commitments.
Opening to the full emotional range, for me, the practice that goes with that is the beauty of the needs, that they're all universal, and whatever emotion I'm having is usually, well, always associated with a need, and I can feel those fully, and that it's fine, and to allow that space.
Yep, thank you. Anybody else? Do you have any experiences from your NVC practice that a particular practice you can see could support the commitments?
Yeah, when things are uncomfortable for me or I'm doubting myself, that I connect to what it is I'm really wanting and what's really mattering. And so when I connect to that, then I'm, you know, maybe I'm wanting to be loved more or something. So that's like risking my significance.
Yeah, so being able to really follow and connect with what is it that I really want and need can support you in having like more strength to risk your significance.
Yes.
Thank you. I think it also, the same practice can support, can form the foundation for the commitment to responsibility, because knowing what I want gives me more energy to put in place the strategies to make it happen. Thank you.
I was thinking of the NVC practice of connecting with the needs of another person that are motivating their actions, and that is supporting the commitment of assumption of innocence.
Thank you. And there is one more.
The practice of NVC I want to share is self-empathy and empathic listening. And I connect these two with these two commitments, loving no matter what, and empathic presence. Also, I connect this with the Gandhian principle of seeing others' humanity. Particularly, I sometimes struggle with this, just because if I'm in conflict with someone, and he or she raises his voice, I usually find very, very difficult for me to have this presence, to be able still to hear her or his needs. Usually in that moment, I get very upset and things that do not go in very, very good way, usually.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to say this is definitely something that I would encourage people to do, is to really think in this kind of practical ways, because in my experience, there are tons of systems that hold a whole bunch of principles, and that I am biased towards practice. And it may be that it's because I come from a tradition of several thousand years of a religion that I don't observe. And still it's a religion of practice, not of belief. There's a lot of very practical things that you do if you're a Jew, if you're a practicing Jew. And I'm thinking sometimes that maybe that history is part of what has given me such a deep respect and reverence for doing practice. Another religion that is very based on practice is Buddhism. It's also a religion of practice, and there may be others. I'm not claiming a monopoly over it. I'm just saying it is the tradition that I come from, so I look at things very often through this lens. It's like, okay, so you very much want to live this commitment, and what are you going to do to increase it? What is the practice? So NVC is a form of practice, which is not the only practice that you can do. There's many things that you can do, to many practices that you can do to anchor in place the commitment. And we can get more into that when we focus on one commitment at a time later. So that's the piece that I wanted to say about practice, that if we want to integrate a life of nonviolence, it will take practice. I've often said that I don't know anything about what is human nature. I have my ideas, but I don't know anything. The one thing that I have a sense that I know for sure is that we are creatures of practice. We become what we practice. And since most of us have not learned to practice nonviolence growing up, we've learned to practice other things, it will take a lot of practice to undo those other things so that we can become more present to the practice of nonviolence through specific actions that we take, rather than just reflecting on big, inspiring commitments and principles. That's all I have to say about practice, and I just want to see if anybody has any further questions before I shift to another topic, another part of the class today.
I really like your invitation to practice, and I really like you grounding it in the cultural history, that you have that cultural context. I know for me, there's a kind of principle of MBC, walking towards practice. One of the things I am appreciating about what you do is offer a constant invitation, because I know that I might have an idea about practice, but I am definitely still struggling to accommodate that in my day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And although, you know, the commitments that come up for me, they are, the minute I read the commitments, I had a complete yes. I had a kind of body reaction. And I know that I need that sort of constant reminder and invitation, because practice isn't my way, and I find it incredibly difficult to create a structure and a practice. And I'm recognizing how tenderly I need to walk towards myself, using both the principles of MBC and the commitments to hold a kind of tender care for what it's like to walk towards something.
This is part of why openness to myself is part of it, because it's almost like your insurance policy against harshness, that you know you're human. You know you're not going to succeed 100% of the time, no matter what. So it's what you can lean on when you fail.
And the bit for me is about not just leaning on me. I mean, cultivating that has been an ongoing kind of an exquisite quality as the rising of care comes up, rather than just criticism for wherever I am. But I like the bit that you do, which is invite, and you constantly re-invite us all. And I'm aware, I went into the weekend sharing an MBC space, and I've kind of quite worked out how I want to show up sharing that initial introduction. I've been feeling my way, and what I came to was I walked in with qualities, first of all, with listening and curiosity. But the other key thing for me is support. So having this kind of community, leaning into others, having people remind me, invite me, and me remembering to invite others are all crucial ways of cultivating myself on this path.
Practice doesn't have to be, you know, like 3 hours a day. A simple form of practice can be that you, let's say, hang the commitment somewhere in your house that you go by regularly. And every time you go by and remember, you look at the list and you read it out loud. Doesn't take more than 2 minutes.
I like you naming that it's not about length of time, because I recognize it's like being with my kids or with friends. I recognize it's often about moments and a quality of attention in a particular moment. So I recognize that comes up. I have many threads of each day that will turn up as a a kind of reawareness or a connection or a softening or something. And it helps me realize that that practice is happening even if it hasn't got some kind of formal structure around it. And I still want to be invited to a kind of more contained, bounded space where every time I remember, for example, to do a dance floor, I get that huge curiosity about how come I'm not just doing this regularly, because it brings such light to me. In the moment I step towards those spaces,
yeah,
I'm enlivened.
I sometimes think that there is some fear somewhere living in us about once again trusting that we or the world can be different, that there is some modicum of peace in internal resignation. And I'm wondering to myself sometimes with you in this moment whether what keeps us from fully embracing the practice is that desire for inner peace, that if I really go wholeheartedly for the practice and then things don't change, I can be so much more disappointed. I don't know.
I think for me it's kind of different. I mean, I suspect those things come up in personal things and in moments, but I think there's something about moving into action. There is I'm often against maybe a quality of lethargy, or I'm familiar doing what I'm doing. So there's a potential level of inertia that I'm up against in a particular moment that leaves me sitting on the sofa rather than standing up and doing the dance floor. And that's definitely changed, but it still takes effort to move from the chair into the place of action and grappling with that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, Nikki, I'd like to know if when you weren't very practiced at showing up with vulnerability, if there was anything that helped you to grow in that space.
Thank you. What was helpful for me was realizing that I couldn't get myself all the way to the other end of where I wanted to be in one step. That it had to be small, tiny, and incremental. That was hugely helpful. And specifically, I became aware that there are millions of micro decisions that I make. Tiny, tiny, tiny decisions that I'm not even aware of. Like little forks in an internal road, where one direction takes me closer to vulnerability and one direction takes me further from vulnerability. And it might not even be noticeable or visible to anyone else but me. But I can make the choice to use one word or another to move my hand this way or that way. Are you following? Am I making sense to you?
Yes. Does that mean that you learned to notice the decisions that you made in any moment?
Yes. I learned to notice the knee-jerk impulse to protect. And when I was aware of the knee-jerk impulse to protect, I went against it in the littlest way that I could. And then if I kept at it, then I would become progressively more vulnerable. And that's what happened. Mm. Nowadays, I can jump, you know, like a few miles in one moment on that path. But it used to be, you know, like a foot. So there is something about, it is another form of self-acceptance and self-honesty, to know that I am where I am, not some other place, and to work exactly with that. I can't make agreements with myself based on who I want myself to be. I can only make agreements with myself based on who I actually am. Does that help?
Very much so. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was just noticing within the commitments, like, say, take authenticity and vulnerability, and I'm wanting to share my truth. It's like there's my need or what's mattering to me, and then within that, there is a pathway, there is a practice within authenticity and vulnerability. Like, it's a built-in compass. So my uncomfortableness tells me, what do I want to do? What do I want to uncover? I feel like there's practice within the commitment. In addition to, then how do we do that? Does that make sense?
Almost. I'm still curious what you mean by there's practice within the commitment.
Well, like when I'm feeling uncomfortable, that's a noticing, and I want to move to comfortableness. So right then and there, I'm practicing changing where I want to go.
Yeah, I think that I mean practice in a slightly different way. There is, I think the way that I hear what you mean by practice, and I may be not hearing it accurately, is more similar to the way I mean intention. What I mean in this context by practice is action.
And so
that
then
increases my capacity to choose the intention.
Yes. Okay, gotcha.
I can have so many intentions and just ignore them. But if I, which is something that I did, if I spend a year every night reviewing my day and finding what I'm grateful for, that happened, let's say, every hour of the day, then through doing that, I develop much easier access to choosing gratitude in the moment.
Yeah, I realized that when you were saying that, that when you, to live in that authentic and or vulnerable space, you just said that in the beginning you took minute steps and now you can jump there. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So I'd like to hear from one more person, and then I know we have at least one person on the line who has prepared to talk about one of the commitments.
I greatly appreciated this piece on the path of vulnerability and the tiny decisions, as well as what I just heard on the practice of gratitude. And so what came to me was that on these tiny decisions, usually for me, the awareness is about having done it in the past, like noticing, oh, I did that, or that happened, and then somehow really fully getting that awareness, and then it comes back in the present. It's like all of a sudden I'm in the moment, and I go, oh, this is that.
Yeah, so the awareness of past successes gives you more motivation in the moment.
Yeah, and a seeing it in the moment.
Connecting the moment to the past strengthens, it's like it creates a thread of conscious choice that gets woven thicker and thicker over time.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
So I want to connect this practice and the commitment intention to one thing. What practice could I use to integrate reframing my stories of from blame and all that to make the other person look human and that they care for me?
The practice, it could be that at the end of every day, you pick one instance of something that happened and you pick something small that isn't like a big trigger to build muscle. Something small that happened in the course of the day, and tell yourself a story about what was going on for that other person that humanly makes sense of their action. You know, you pick somebody in the supermarket that yelled at their child. I mean, just something that is not relevant to you, that is not a big trigger for you. And you just practice building that muscle. And you take, over time, situations that are closer and closer to you.
Thank you.
All right. So we have Sarah. You prepared one of the commitments to talk about today?
Yes.
Go for it.
Okay. I wrote something, and I'm just going to read it. I wrote about assumption of innocence. To assume innocence is to recognize that each of us, at birth, is born in a state of having done no wrong, and to know that core essence of innocence stays with us throughout life. Remembering this can help me to see the sweetness and original blessing that each human being is when they join the human family. To assume innocence in its purest form is to see only that innocence, that essence that is so clear at birth, and not to entertain any thought about finding out whether or not my assumption is correct, but simply to know that this is how I choose to approach all my relations. Assumption of innocence could also be called giving another the benefit of the doubt or seeing the light within another. When I find myself confused, upset, or in criticism of another's behavior, or I find myself in judgment about the motivations I perceive, I can reorient and realign myself with a commitment to assume that the person is trying to meet some need, however unskillful or ineffective or costly their strategies may be. I can choose to treat the other person as trustworthy. Taking this attitude gives me genuine power to create what I want in partnership with others, because instead of battling with unsavory motives and strategies I don't agree with, I'm meeting the other person in their humanity and seeing them in a way that holds their dignity as a primary concern. By connecting with some wholesome motivation, I allow and even expect the other person to show up in their integrity, and I give them nothing to battle with. I steadfastly refuse to indulge in criticism and judgment of others and keep my eyes on the beauty and light within the other, so that beauty has a place to shine through and I can be a place where it can be received gratefully and with celebration. When the other person experiences being seen in their best light, they are more likely to want to work together with me toward a common goal and are less likely to fight against me. In turn, I also am less likely to feel the need to do battle with them or to force my way to what I want. Way, assuming innocence is a foundation for nonviolence.
Thank you. How do you feel having read it?
Clearer about what this is.
Yeah, I'm really appreciating the kind of like you took it really far and at a level of detail that really makes it palpable. I'm wondering if anyone has any questions or comments to Sarah. And
Sarah, I so appreciate this and I would love to have a copy of it. I live in a co-housing community and one of our members put in carpet that's outgassing. And I could feel a palpable change within me in my attitude toward him as I was listening to what you wrote and what you read. And I actually just have tears in my eyes. I'm so grateful to be shifting my attitude toward him. And I've been aware of this and I've been directing my heart in that direction, but I feel much more settled right now in that. So thank you very much.
So thank you. I'm thrilled. Anything else you want to ask or say, Sarah?
Yeah, it's nice to hear at least one response.
Yeah. I have one thing that I want to say, one small nuance that is kind of complex and intense for me, and I want to just articulate it, which is that assuming the innocence of someone to me does not equate with trusting them. I can see the innocence as in really grasp the needs, really grasp that the person is acting from intentions that are no different from my own, and yet not trust their capacity to engage in strategies that would work for me or the environment or other people or whatnot. So that for me is a gap. I don't have to see them as trustworthy. I don't have to decide to work with them. I can be full of the assumption of innocence, and if I don't trust that you have a way to meet your needs rather than hurting other people, I might still want to put you behind bars even if I assume your innocence. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah.
Thank you. That was my only addition.
Hey, Mickey. Sarah, I just wanted to say, I think one of the things that touched me so much about what you wrote was how you made it personal, how you made it very much about you, and the depth at which you reached to express that. So that really touched me.
Thank you.
I just wanted to thank you for the piece about trusting, because that was the place where I was still feeling kind of nudgy. And holding that in, I don't know exactly how to say this, but as part of the equation, I think will allow me to act differently.
Glad for that.
Yeah, this piece is important for me, so I just want to make sure I get it right about what you just said about trust. Not equate to trust them. I don't have to work with them, but in the process of not working with them, I need that little piece, something over there to make the connection. So is that something that you're saying, then when we put them behind bars or whatever, we're using protective force versus punitive?
Yes, it's very similar. I will put you behind bars and I will still maintain the full picture of your humanity, of your innocence on a deep level, at which I get that what you did came from wherever it came from, that has to do with whatever you can do to meet your needs. There's nothing else.
So when I'm behind bars, even if you put it with the put me behind bars, you will still kind of maintain the relationship and kind of goodwill, or
ideally in the set of stories that I wrote about the world that I imagine, that I envision in the future, prison guards are selected for their unusual capacity to love.
So even if I'm not trusting them, but I'm loving them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I can love someone and I can have zero trust that they can do anything different from what they're doing and still love them. Yeah. Thank you. I want to talk about one more bit that has to do with NVC principles and how they relate to the commitment. And then I want to give you an opportunity to participate in small groups. And that is that NVC rests on a set of assumptions about human beings and the world. For example, the assumption that all human beings share the same needs. This is something that we believe, that we base our practice on, but it's not actually something that can be studied or proven. It's almost like replacing one story about reality and human beings with another. And both of them are stories, they just have different effects. For me, the kind of assumptions that we base our NVC practice on allow us to take on the commitment, because without, in some degree, being willing to accept these assumptions, we would be fools to take on these commitments. In other words, if I believe that everybody's just trying to get whatever they can get out of life and get away with, and I practice generosity, I would live in perpetual resentment and fear. So that one relationship between the commitments and NVC principles is that really engaging with the questions of the assumptions that NVC rests on makes it easier to choose to make the commitments. And then the second part of the NVC principles, which is the intentions, are more directly linked to the commitments, and they're just sometimes appear to me more action-oriented, practical intentions that help with the commitments, that are more at the level of practice than the commitments which are more at a level of a global path. So this is all I wanted to say, and now I would like to invite you to go into small groups. So what I'd like you to do in your group is one of several things. You can just talk about anything you want. You can get support for any challenge that you have related to this path of moving towards the commitment. Or you can explore your reactions and thoughts about what we've talked about so far. You can discuss a commitment or a practice or an intention that stand out to you that you want to get some feedback and interest in, or anything else that is alive and relevant for you. We'll do it for 15 minutes and then come back together for more harvesting. Hello, welcome back. I would like to see if anybody would like to share one or two things from your group before we move to closure and next steps.
Something I was sharing is that I celebrate clarity that I now have between nonviolence and nonviolent communication.
Ah.
And yes, and tonight I've helped to deepen the clarity, so I'm even happier. I find it really helpful because I find myself being a lot more comfortable to talk about nonviolence with other people than I was to talk about nonviolent communication. And I think I understand why this is so, which is essentially because I've seen NVC as a practice, as a set of practices and principles, and unless we know the language and the jargon, it's very hard to describe what it is. Whilst nonviolence is something that my sense is that everybody can somewhat aspire towards. Like, we don't enjoy being in a state of violence. And I imagine that many people would feel a sense of relief at the idea that there is something called nonviolence, and there is a possibility to live a nonviolent life. And so there's a connection straight away with that other person, which is not the case with NVC.
Thank you. I really appreciate the way that you said it. So my intention for next week, my plan, what I hope will happen, is that we will see how picking a commitment for a period can shape how we respond to life. If we hold for a certain period one of the commitments as a lens, for example, I have been holding authenticity and vulnerability as a lens for many years. And how different would life be? How different would I respond to life if I held a different lens? It doesn't have to be many years. It can be every month or two that we change something. So I'd like to pick three people to take a commitment and talk about what it's like to have that commitment be a path for a while. It's not so much what the commitment is, but what it means if I look at life this way, if I respond to everything through that lens. So I'm wondering if there are two or three people who are willing to present for next week, taking three different commitments. Great. Thank you. And I would just like at this point to hear from a couple of people. What stood out to you from today? How have you been affected? What did you experience? What did you learn today that is going to support your own path towards nonviolence? It's very meaningful for me to hear.
I'll take this clarity that you gave about that the commitments represent an intentionality, and that what you're inviting us to do is to look at, you know, practical actions that we can take that will help us live that intentionality.
Thank you. Anybody else? What are you taking with you from today?
I like the idea and the reminder, and also the path I follow of doing small things at a time. And in particular, what you shared about the end of the day, picking a small situation and telling ourselves a story about what might be going with the other person to help build that muscle. So thank you.
Thank you very much to everyone. Bye-bye.